but it's not all development. So you could say, well, in the next couple of years, we really want to try to bump up that number, that level of service in development, because it's a lower level of service than the level of service in acquisition and acreage. Now, there's still all that issue about, boy, you know, you got opportunities, you want to acquire when you can, and real estate market has been starting to pick up, and, you know, you're going to miss your opportunity. So it's not lopsided, but, you know, your level of service is, that's showing you that, boy, you haven't met it in terms of that.
So talk more about that, because when at least my starting concept on this, is that while the county is developing, mm-hmm. that it seems to me that the first priority should be accumulation. Pros and cons. Why would we want to develop more accumulation?
Just on some of the comments that have already been here today, and having been on the acquisition side for a while, a couple things. One, if you're land banking, you have to be able to afford to do it, because you're going to take something off the tax roll, and you're going to hold it in public ownership, and you know, that's for a lot of people, that can be just a hard sell by itself. Even if you buy it when it's real cheap and hold it, and it's really inexpensive to just hold it, but it's off the tax roll. So there's that issue folks wrestle with. The other issue is, boy, buy it now when you can, because you may not have the opportunity later, or when you do, it may be way more expensive because the area is all built up, and the demand is greater for any vacant or underbuilt parcels. So there's that piece. If one of the realities in terms of public perception is, if you have a lot of undeveloped parkland around you, you're scratching your head going, what the heck? I've lived here for 10 years, and this piece of property has been sitting here, and I'm looking at it for 10 years, and we've had, you know, vandalism, or, you know, they use it as a dog park, and I don't like the dogs barking and scooping the poop, but whatever. Lots of different stuff will happen when a site is less than or underdeveloped, or, you know, in public land ownership, based on the people around them. Some will love it because it's like, good, I don't have a house right next to me, and they're staring in my face. But, you know, the perceptions are very different. And the other piece is, if you only have so much of funding to maintain a park system, even those little bits, if they come out of the general fund, even if it's a small amount to maintain all these little disparate, you know, vacant lands, they're taking away from the developed parks or developing parks that you would be maintaining for people to actively be using. So, you know, it's kind of a waiting game, both words, which is most important. So,
would it make sense for us to say that we want to have a ratio between developed and undeveloped? We want to keep adding land, but the more land for every 5 acres of land we add, mm-hmm. we want to be sure that we've developed at least one more.
Okay. So you could develop a kind of policy, not quite a standard, that puts out a quantitative value. It's my understanding, it's predating me, I think that one of the reasons that when the PIF districts were set up, they distinctly developed two separate standards of acquisition and development for the very reason of this discussion now of which is better. And as administrative and financial and political situations change all the time, like a pendulum swinging back and forth, it could be, hey, we're all about acquiring. And then you have a glut of undeveloped, and people start to react to the glut of undeveloped, and then, oh, it's all about developing. And so they developed standards so that you could have both, and the concurrency weighing on both, it meant you had to have some kind of equitable use. Develop, acquire, do both at the same time, and you have that 6-year window, now it's a 10-year window. So combining the two of them gives you much more flexibility. And my guess would be because of this level of service, at least for the next couple of years, maybe in this 4-6 year period, it's looking at catching up to the land that has been acquired, not fully, but and looking for opportunities. So you could put a standard in there. I'm not sure exactly how you would do
it. Well, and you basically said, you know, we used to have a standard written, but we've abolished that.
Yeah.
It may indeed make sense to instead of having a standard created by funding mechanisms, mm-hmm. then we go back to that standard, at least as a goal.
So, yeah, so the goal piece.
So we still have the flexibility of money, here. But we still have a goal of getting something
done. When we do the capital facilities plan, that's going to basically outline what should you be acquiring, what should you be developing. Now, the PIF program has our standards already, like 2 acres of neighborhood park acquired, 2 acres developed, that's the same, and the community parks, you know, 4 1/4, and anyway, those different standards, they're set, and that's part of the formula. So you're still getting that money, but you're not spending it, like, if this has to be acquisition, this has to be developed. So there's no flexibility.
Right. The other piece, though, is if we develop, we have to make sure there's maintenance money that goes
absolutely.
With that.
Okay.
So the maintenance money comes out of the general fund, correct? No,
the MPD.
Not in the blue.
Not the blue.
But okay. the blue, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because of that shifting of money when the economy was tanking, if you built out completely those 35 parks, you'd have to take some of these other parks out that have been moved into that funding maintenance. So that's another like policy decision that would be valuable for you folks to decide that it's worth advocating. Because in order to keep developing these parks, you've got to get some other ones on back on general fund and not under the MPD funding, the levy funding.
Yeah, because 20 years from now, this picture is going to be so different.
Yeah, 20 years from now, you're going to want to ask the question, with the full build-out of population, will that levy pay for all the parks that we are saying you need?
To maintain.
In 20 years of maintenance will be different because they'll be old like Vancouver stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's another little...
That's a huge
another piece. Little one to put in your ear. One of the huge problems that they're having in the city is because these are old parks,
mm-hmm.
they weren't designed properly. They have trees that have roots that are up across the sidewalk. There's no access for disabled folks unless they go in and do a whole completely redo. I mean, there's a lot of problems that come along at that 20-year point that I'm hoping we're covering. I'm hoping we're not going to get...
There'll be different things that will bite us that we can't see out there yet.
At that point, where's the money coming from maintenance? That has to come from general fund, right?
It has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's going to be one of the things that this process is going to show is a big gap.
Yeah.
If you really want to have a good system that serves everybody, how is it going to be paid for?
What about doing the blue? I wish it wasn't recorded because it's just a silly question. So the blue is the
levy.
The levy or the maintenance
mm-hmm.
that you receive.
Operation and maintenance.
Now, the people aren't, so is it possible to do something like where, if you're on Long Hill Court boundary line, that there's a, how is that received? How is the maintenance received?
It's part of your property tax payment. It's a levy that you're paying.
What about if you did a, like where the line isn't a distinct line, but it's blurred? So just say at the corner of 9, I'm just
mm-hmm. yeah.
thought experiment. Just say there's a park on the corner of 9 that the people up here and here would have access to it, right?
They do. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they don't pay for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you had the line that was blurred, right, that was just say within once half a mile of that park, those fees go to taxes would be raised for those individuals in that area.
Can't do that.
You
would have to establish a district. You would have to redefine a district, and those people would have to vote if they want to pass that levy on themselves. That's basically what it
is. So
it has to be viable.
At some point, the levy goes away. Is that correct?
I don't
think so.
Unless
we go vote to take it out.
I'd be curious.
I think
about
the MPD
that
was established with it.
Does
the only way that you can reverse it is with another vote to remove it. I don't think it had an expiration date on it.
The point I'm asking, the reason I'm asking it, obviously, is when that's gone. You know, we got lots and lots of parks out there. Are we really going to be able to take care of them? Are we willing?
It wasn't like a it was not like a bond or whatever that expired. It was it established the MPD, the district.
But once we've built the parks out that are required by this levy.
These 35 parks were built because this levy passed.
Right.
This is a maintenance levy.
So now it's maintenance.
That's what allowed us to build the parks, is because we had the maintenance funding to support them. Okay. So this levy is ongoing, as far as I know. I don't know if it's sunset.
Okay. Yeah. Because if it isn't, I see a major problem here.
Oh yeah.
We got a lot of big parks.
Oh yeah. We'd be out of business.
No money to take care of it.
Yeah. But you know, that levy is susceptible. It is a junior levy. So back there, when we were going through our budget crunch, you know, all the senior levies in the old high school had to be made whole, or you know,
yeah, those were
status. So that means they can raise the junior levies.
Priority.
And so we were really taking a hard look at what our projections were going to be coming in the 2011 year, 2012. Yeah. And you know, what we typically bring in a year's time is about $3.1 million. And projections that we had for 2012 was going all the way down to about $30,000 to $80,000, which, you know, the one thing nice about the levy funds is the funds are always banked there. If we don't use them, they continue into the next year. And so luckily we've got some funds saved up, because we were pulling that money in from kind of the first year, but we didn't have any parks to maintain. So we were able to establish a bank. Well, now that bank is going away slowly, and then as we're building up all these parks, and so we're at the point right now where, you know, although we're bringing in 3.1 per year, we're at about 2.6 per year right now as far as the use of those funds. So if you project out the remaining 8 parks to be built, 3 of them are community parks, we can't afford it. And so that's what created this delay of us building more parks until we can make sure that we secure the funding to maintain those parks. So the commissioners, just this year, when they approved the budget, they said, okay, let's start shifting some of these general fund parks back. And so they gave us $150,000 of general fund dollars so that we could take 2 of the 12 parks that we moved into the GCBD back out. So we've got, I think we're going to be able to get 2 parks out. With any luck, next year they'll give us another $150,000, which is another 10%. Because the total cost to maintain those 12 parks that came over to DCB is about $1.5 million now for a 2-year period. So that's the hope. And so if we can shift that whole $1.5 million of responsibility back, we can easily afford the remainder of the parks, and probably even some more after that.
So to reinforce this a little bit, the area in blue that is the MPD was voted in as the levy to maintain the 35 parks. There were other parks already in the area before that passed. Like Phillida, Salmon Creek, Klein Line, Hazelbell, etc. Those parks, technically, in all the calculations, weren't the ones that were going to be funded by that money. But because of the dip, they got taken off the general fund, and they're being funded by this, and now what Bill's trying to do is take them out. So even though this is blue, and you say this is for operations and maintenance of parks in this area, the fuzzy line is, well, there's these older parks that weren't under the levy funding, that got shifted to be supported by the levy funding, and that now you want to take off the levy funding if you want to build out to the promise. I know. Yeah. This is like a shell game, but, you know, it's not a shell show.
It was a temporary fix, right?
It was.
It was necessary.
Yeah. It was necessary.
Yep.
Now it's time to get back to reality.
So the maintenance levy, is that a full 50-cent levy? Or
no, 25 cents.
It's 25 cents.
It's 27, is it?
Yeah.
I think it's, 27. Okay. And it gets collected at whatever it gets collected at. I don't know what it is right now. Yeah. It changes every year based on property rights assessed values. Mm-hmm.
I think we should all be very happy that our taxes didn't go up this year. I'm astounded that they were able to get
things. And then the levy is for the vote of the people, the 50 districts.
Mine went up too.
They're adopted by ordinance.
So they don't need to be voted on.
Right, exactly. They still could be subject to the whims of, you know, fee waivers and stuff, but so far.
You thoroughly confused us now. Where do you want to go from here?
Okay, so here's where I want to go from here. First, I want to establish the importance of geographic equity. Should people be able to walk to a park? So we map this by saying, okay, here's a park, now this one's undeveloped, that one is developed, but pretending that they're all developed someday, this is what guides where you target, where new parks to go. So, just as a philosophy, would you endorse that philosophy? That you should be able to walk to a park within half mile of your house, some kind of park, or national area, trail, or something.
But every child needs access to a play area.
So, is geographic equity important?
It's critical.
Distribution of park. Now, do it in the next slide. I would say it does not have to be a neighborhood park.
Right.
Because community park, I can walk to the community park.
That's even better.
In a neighborhood park, it's got more stuff. Sure. So we also do this map shed, walk shed thing, like here's Chanel. Theoretically, you could walk from here or from here, but once you get beyond there, it's hard. And in reality, not too many people want to cross 139. Not too many people want to cross 149. It's kind of scary. They're both very fast roads. So in reality, you're really looking at a service walkability rate that's huge. And sometimes when we do this mapping on GIS, you can get that road alignment to be recognized in the modeling, and sometimes not. So in this case, not.
Yeah.
And then fairgrounds, which really the park doesn't go all the way west, really. It's developed on the east end. But it's a community park, and anybody who's along that road could walk to it, even though I don't think there's sidewalks.
Yeah.
We're not mapping sidewalks on this, by the way, but so that we would.
But it's got a nice parking lot, Gene.
Yeah. But our parking lot almost was double that size.
Yeah.
So managed to.
Well, they carved in that green area, Hairs going on anyway.
Yeah. So that whole walk shed idea would apply to community parks as well. So we get this coverage. So the question that I would have is.
When you say half mile, you're talking about a half hour?
No, it's more like a 15-minute walk.
See, that's what I think is way too short.
So
what about children?
Right.
Yeah.
For children, that's the right distance.
With a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, well, I have a 2-year-old.
Preschool. Just say you have preschoolers or elementary school kids.
I'm going to walk the kid to the park. I'm going to turn off the door.
Well, yes, you're going to walk the kid to the park. You're going to get to the park. They're going to go down the swings a couple times. Oh, Mom, I got to go to the bathroom. How fast can you walk home? You're going to go to the bathroom in the neighborhood.
There's not many bushes there.
The group of kids that are playing soccer in the street in front of my house, or baseball, depending upon the season, for them to have a park to walk to and do that activity is critical.
The problem is, though, is there's so many roads. I don't care if my kids are 12. I'm not going to have them walk in that road. So that verbiage, maybe to me, if it's a certain distance, is more obtainable than walkable distance, because there's so many places I wouldn't let my kids walk.
Yeah, and I agree with you too. I guess the reality of life, and I hate to say this, it sounds judgmental, is that observing the children in my neighborhood, there are a huge number of children that seem to be out there playing in the street all day. You don't even know where they came from in some cases. That are permitted to do that. Not only permitted, but encouraged to do that. Go out and play, get away. And their parents do let them. And it's, I would never do that, but I tend to be a little bit paranoid or something. I stay right by my kids. But there is a large number of children that do. don't know if you want to call them latchkey kids or what, but they're out there playing in the street. And for them to be able to walk to the park, I just can't tell you how really sad I get that these kids have to play in the street. And so walkable places, even if it's not a huge park, I think is important.
So across the country, when folks have this walking distance standard, the standard ranges from a quarter mile to a half mile. That's been the
really?
Range. Isn't we have a half mile.
Isn't the school district standard a mile?
Could be.
It's an interesting
state doesn't
start spending
money until you get to the
end. I thought
they just stopped at every
driveway.
Yeah, well, that's for
busing.
That's for busing. Yeah, not how far a kid should walk.
I go to school.
It's a mile. It's a mile when they walk there and back.
So is it one way and you're there all day? As opposed to, you know, what's within reach or within your parents ringing the bell for you to come home or whatever. So it's a little different activity. So the main question that you want to consider here is, you've got this standard that's quantitative, that justifies the fees, and it has, you know, the acreage standard and the development standard, and then this other standard, if you will, guideline, policy, target, is that there's an equitable distribution throughout your system. So that they're on, say, poorer areas, and, oh, sorry, you guys didn't have it, we're not giving you, or more dense areas, or whatever. And this is, you know, in the urban system. So that's the other piece that helps balance or prioritize where you should be targeting acquisitions and development.
But you're saying there are no places where more than half mile is really acceptable.
Not that have a walking standard.
Okay.
Yeah. They have a walking
sure, there
standard,
are.
Okay.
You know, if you get out like into the fairgrounds area, first of all, they've got such large lots out there, they don't have to go to a park. It's where you get into this population density.
So we're going to build them just as many parks as we're going to build anywhere else. I don't care if they got 50 acres.
Yeah.
There's still going to be a park right there so they can walk to it and have fun.
Is that...
Well, you won't have the population there either, though.
For different areas. In other words, like we just said, someone has a 5-acre parcel. Is the use for that park going to be anywhere near what it's going to be in the more densely populated areas?
So that's a very good question, and it's probably one of the other questions that this comp plan should ask is, we don't know. No one in the parks department that while I've been involved in it, has been actively surveying and counting how many people are using our neighborhood or our community parks. We've got traffic counters.
Oh, they do that.
Who? What's that?
Did they do that?
Well, they had that volunteer, but that was for the trails that we did that.
Yeah, it's a trail count every year.
We did that.
So you have a measure of usage. You count if you want to count.
But can't you project all these mathematical wizards? That in this area there are this many people living, so therefore we can assume that this percentage of people will use the park. If I'm in an area that has a lot of 5-acre parcels, I can assume there's going to be a lot less people using that park.
Yeah, but you won't have the population density if they have a 5-acre parcel.
Exactly, that's what I'm talking about.
There's some variables here where there's the size of the park and how many amenities are in it.
Yeah.
Like a 2-acre park might have the same amount of amenities as a 5-acre park. So part of it is there's a range. And the range gives you flexibility in implementing this. So then there's a range of you're in an area that has people with half-acre lots to three-quarter-acre lots, but their current zoning density is maybe 6,000 feet, and if they are 6,000 square feet. If they sell, you could get 10 properties on that.
Yeah.
And that, so that's going to change the dynamic. So the park system now doesn't have adequate resources to adequately count and survey who's using our parks, where do they come from. I mean, the community centers do, because they're taking fees and they're paying. So there's an easy mechanism.
Right. And they got a door to walk through.
So you can count.
Yeah.
It's a huge gap in the system. Is we don't know.
So couldn't that be? So can I really like that train of thought, because I really like the idea of being not only But I think going by the strict number of population seems problematic, you know, to say the least, because it's that whole story I was mentioning earlier. What's people's actual need and what's their felt need, right? If people feel they need a park, great, then let's get them a park. As opposed to, my kids don't go outside, they play video games all day, you know? You know what I'm saying? So a part of the comps plan could be part of the park system could have a new branch that does research, ethnographic research, you know, as opposed, then you can figure out, you know, you can target things more specifically.
You would spend more money doing that research than you would be building and maintaining a park.
Think of it, businesses all over the world do ethnographic research. They're sure. What's lowest taxes? What's what's workforce in the area? You know, who are the people who is it blue collar workers? Is it white collar workers? Do white collar workers come to our parks, or is it blue collar workers? You know what I'm saying? So there's tons of data that could be added that could be overlapped, right? Very easily, and a lot of businesses do this. And so just to go, hey, we're even partnering with an organization that already does the research. Go, hey, look, we're looking at three different locations, A, B, and C. Which, give you 6 months of research, which one out of the A, B, and C want this park? Or what do they want? You know, and without giving them, doing a survey without having them...
Leading
survey, yeah. You know, basically have a blind survey. Because then you accomplish what exactly you want to accomplish. The population seems so it's a very simple way of doing something that's very complex, right? And because the people are very complex creatures, there should be maybe a different way of looking at it. So maybe not just in the comps plan, it could be a whole research department to figure out. Or not a research, maybe one or two people to focus on.
Because you're talking about need. You use that as a figure.
So need in
figuring all this together. You give me a number for need.
Right.
Where'd you get that number?
That number was based on those quantifiable standards.
Right.
Yeah. And I hear what you're saying, because I really like facts and data too, Adam. But I guess from my perception, first of all, I don't see that distinction between white collar, blue collar, and the need for parks. But
I was just throwing that out.
Yeah. But one of the things that I think that answers a lot of those is the public outreach that's done. You start out at the population level, at least from my experience with it, in defining that need, and then when that need comes about, there is a huge... Not that it's always adequate, but the public outreach and meetings with the people on what is it you perceive you need in this park?
Right.
Do we even need it? If we do, what do you want in it? Do you want the spinners? I mean, they get down to the level of, I know that we gave input that the merry-go-round that we wanted wasn't going to be there, but that they would do spinners, I think you called them,
right,
etc. But it got down in our neighbors... ended up voting on exactly that, what it was they felt they wanted and needed for it. And so, I think it wouldn't hurt if we at least looked at, could we have one day a year like they do for the trails, just to take a look, you know, to fill that need.
Where that number comes from.
I know that our mother's group, it doesn't matter. I mean, we go to all these different parks and...
But you're telling me that I need to put more parks up in number 10. Why?
Yeah, because you have a standard that says you should have so many acres of parks per 1,000 people. And you have so many thousands of people.
I don't have 1,000 people on 5-acre lots who don't need a park.
There's not that many, because I will tell you, in Park District 10, I'm up the northern portion of it. And I will tell you that is the one that I hear about all the time.
And I'll pick one. I don't care.
You know, well, nine has probably got some of the best, but that's because they've got a very active volunteer army down in there that just goes for it.
See, we can't count on this.
So Adam brings up a good point. Marsha brings up a good point about If you were in the business of providing parks, you would spend a certain amount of your business revenue doing marketing, finding out what's the need, what do people want.
Right.
Yep.
That's part of the comp plan process, to some extent. It's part of public outreach. Let's find out, what do people need, what do they want, what are the perceptions out there?
Right.
Do people want more Luke Jensen, or do they want more trail connections?
Right.
Do they want more little neighborhood parks where they can go and meet with their neighbors? All those things are going to be part of this public outreach, so we have to kind of like
step up. I'm going to tell you right now that the people who are most impacted by the lack of parks live in areas like the ones south of 500. Huge apartment complexes where
absolutely
you're
densely
not
populated.
They're not going to come and tell you.
Exactly. So one of the other pieces that Adam was pointing out was if you did more focused demographic research,
right,
you could find out a lot more.
Right.
But you also have to count on assumptions. Okay, let's assume that this is the current population, let's assume the population is going to change in this direction. And I'm thinking more specifically of a lot of the parks in the city that were built 25 years ago, and they were very young populations, and now they're all grandparents.
Right.
And so the park went from a really, really busy time,
right,
and then 15 years later, those kids are all in college.
Right.
And now, guess what? The people who live there are grandparents, and those grandchildren are coming back and then using the park. So the park went through really busy, then it was slow, and then it was, you know, it was dog walkers and older folks. It was empty a lot, and now it's like little toddlers. So the challenge with all of that is that can you always respond to the changes in demographics as older neighborhoods get densified and urbanized? Or are your resources such that you're going to establish an infrastructure that you think is solid enough to at least, you know, manage the weights of change?
Because the population is going to be fluid.
Well, the demographics, the care for your population.
Because I'm in an area right now that's older homes,
yeah,
large lots, but they're rolling over. I mean, I got apartments not very far away. I'm sure some behind me coming up soon.
Sure.
Neighbor across the street has like 10 acres behind his house. You know, I know what's going to happen there. Sure,
apartment building.
Exactly. But right now, senior citizens are using that little park.
Mm-hmm.
We walk down there. We usually walk the dog. Rarely take grandchildren. We have big yards, so my grandchildren play in the yard. But it's going to change. I guess it's what I'm saying. So in my head, I thought, why can't we just figure out the acreage? In other words, if I have, you know, the lot sizes, they're all recorded. If you have those numbers, then you're going to know how many people are going to be in those units, basically. So you could come up with some neat figures. But you can't do that. Because
that projection was. Based on
the projection,
yeah,
is based on the vacant building land, vacant land model.
Okay.
So their build out is basically looking at what do we have now, and how much of those lands are not fully developed to the current, the potential density, and so that's what the projection is on
that
population.
To go there.
So that's what all these numbers are based on.
And that's where I went back to that basis at the very beginning of. Where did we come up with that standard?
Yeah.
Because when I look at the national standard, it's here, and we've set ours here. Like I was saying to Jean, well, what is it? They've set the scale of this is A, and we're willing to settle for a B grade, you know, that we're down here. You know, I wanted to know where we came out, why we were lower than national.
But I think that's
so, you know, because the other part that's based, because everything boils back, that population projection is pretty well... but the projections that they made are... The statistical analysis that's gone into it is used industry-wide, not just parks. And so going back to that core thing of what we're going to multiply it by...
All right. All right, so we got gaps. We want to try to fill the gaps. The last piece that is in this is just the regional system. There we go. And then the question of, in a regional system, do you count the state parks and the national parks or national historic sites in terms of, these are facility drawn or activity drawn or event drawn sites where you're driving to it because you want to swim in the pond or you want to fish in the river or you want to go to the you know, Park Day at the National Historic Site. So, but our performance is standard out now, it's 60%, so we're not there yet.
46% ain't bad.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's not bad. That's the developed acreage, 46%. So, more of the regional parks probably need to be developed. Daybreak is one of the ones that is being pursued now in terms of let's get some grants, let's get some financial resources, because 111 or 118 acres was added to Daybreak, which was just a little bitty spot along the East Fork of Lewis River.
Really?
So, huge site. And that was with a partnership with Columbia Land Trust and years and years and years ago. So on the other side of, well, on the same side of the boat launch, all that field is future expansion of that regional park.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So as those get developed, that will bump up some of those numbers.
Yeah.
That will be good as Camp Bonneville gets cleaned up. That will bump up some numbers. I don't know what will happen with Woodland. That could bump up numbers.
So now I can assume you're going to take all this stuff and digest it. So
yeah.
Then at our January meeting, you're going to be able to walk through this without too much stuff.
Well, I'm thinking who's missing? Just
Greg.
Kelly read it all, I think. Sort of
Kelly
loved
up of all of this.
So I don't know if we need to. What we will have to do is decide, you know, what are the key questions from this information that you want to have the public respond to, because you've raised a bunch of questions here, and if we want to get some prioritizing, is it more important to land bank as the community grows to capture those sites, or is it important to develop some of the ones that are, or should it be a balance between the two? Those are some of the questions. There are some questions, yeah. And so the next steps. Let's hit the button here. Yeah. So the next steps that we're looking at are, what are the current trends across the nation in terms of recreation? You know, more disc golf or dirt biking or BMX track stuff, whatever. And can we accommodate, how should we be accommodating those off leash areas, all the sorts of special recreational things? What's our existing sports field inventory? What's the demand and the need? We don't have a standard, so I can't just measure it and say, oh, we have 33.
There's
fields.
Not even a national standard.
There is a national. There is a historical national one.
Okay.
But we don't have an adopted one. Should we adopt one?
Yes.
So, well then. I will give you where we would be if the national one was what we adopted in the next.
Because you're talking 20 to 30 years, where are we going to be?
Oh, yeah.
What are we striving to get to? Today, the people are going to look at those numbers and go, especially the commissioners are going to look at those numbers and go, oh, my God, you know, we can't afford this.
Well,
but that's not today. We've got to stop thinking about today.
And then the whole trail piece. Well, what's our trail system now? How do we implement this? What are the priorities? Looking at how use is increasing and all that sort of. You know, what are those questions?
Standard for trips.
So that's what's coming up next in terms of comp plan. And the other piece that's coming up next are open houses being planned. We want to get some surveys actively out there. We want to get questions out there to get people involved. Any of you that are involved in sports clubs, trail groups, community-based anything, social groups, neighborhood associations, if you're involved in them, ask them, what are their key issues? If they have key issues about parks, trails, open space, other forms of recreation, what are they missing in their life that would come under that umbrella? You know, what are their pet peeves? Whatever it is, start talking with them to be able to help us articulate what should those questions be to the overall general public as well. That will happen. I've got a whole list of questions that we ask when we go in and do park comp plans with communities across the Pacific Northwest. But we want to have something new to Clark County. So I'll share with you a list of all those questions, and you can go through and say, this is important, this isn't, here's some more, or this made me think of something else.
Will we be doing this in places other than, in other words, I guess I'm again thinking of the high density areas where you're going to have a hard time getting people to respond.
Yeah.
Can we do a door to door thing there? I mean, how is that going to be handled? How are you going to get to those people?
Jeff, do you want to jump in? Do you want jump in here? Marcia asked a question, how do we get to those people that don't come to public open houses?
We don't participate.
You're going to do the website? It needs to work this time.
Ouch.
Well, we did, when we did our survey for the Chinook Park Committee, and there was all that input. Joaquin put up the website. Never mind.
Okay.
I'm just saying. It got work, buddy.
Something to come up. I mean, I was working on some storm-related response.
I'm not sure yet. In my opinion, you can get the best answers to where these people are by working with the sheriff and the police departments in both areas. Because they know where the problem areas are. And that's probably an area I think we should be looking at and saying, do we have a park in this area? Do we need a park? In, you know, that kind of thing. So,
let
how
me,
do you get those?
You go to the sheriff's advisory.
Yeah.
Let me talk for a few minutes, and then we can have a good discussion. First of all, in case you don't know who I am or don't remember who I am, I'm Jeff Mize. I handle public information and outreach for the Public Works Department, which of course includes the Parks Division.
Thank you,
Jeff. No problem. We have talked about this some internally. We talked about it a lot last summer. We have not been doing much with it recently. We actually drafted a public outreach plan for the comp plan update and outlined a variety of elements that that could include. Now, the specific question that I heard after I pulled my head out of my computer is, how do you reach people who don't come to open houses? And I will tell you, a lot of people don't come to open houses, and particularly depending on how you approach your open house. I can pretty much guarantee you, if you put out your open house, come talk about parks, you're going to get a very, very small turnout. Now, if you frame the question about some of the things that I heard Gene talking about, what's more important for you, to have a sports complex like this or to have a walkable neighborhood park near your home? What's more important, to have a large regional facility you can drive to and spend the entire day at, or to have a nature path nearby? When you frame the question like that, you do start to reach more people. People start paying attention. People start seeing, aha, this is what it means for me. And you really need to have them have that aha moment, or you're not reaching them.
Sure.
One of the things that you see a lot of people doing now is not so much having the big open house in downtown Vancouver. Don't worry, Yackel, it's not that far to drive down there. No, we like to go out to the people and meet with them, whether that means with neighborhood associations, Rotary clubs, Kiwanis groups, you name it. There's a whole bunch of organizations out there that we can tap into. More importantly, though, is that we already have some names and emails of people that we know who are passionate about parks issues. And I'm just going to be very honest here. Those are the people you really want to reach more than anyone else, the people who are really plugged in, the people who feel strongly about these issues, the people who care. You want to make sure to get word to them. I was talking with Bill before the start of this meeting about, well, we could do a countywide mailer and it would cost this amount of money, and probably a large number of people would toss it aside like a piece of junk mail. However, if we had a database that had, you know, thousands of email addresses in it, of people who have been involved in parks before, who are civically minded, we can reach those people a lot cheaper and a lot more effectively than we could through a mailer. In terms of, you know, other ways to reach people, SurveyMonkey is one of those. And that is a way. Is everyone familiar with this?
Mm-hmm. And you still have to have that badge. I mean, the email address is helpful for that. I mean,
yes.
It's on the website, but it's,
you
it
can,
kind of sits there.
Yeah, and SurveyMonkey is just a simple way where you can put a survey up online. Anyone can use it. And you just invite people to participate in it. You ask those key questions that you want feedback on. And Chris, you're absolutely right. The emails are the most important thing. At the county, we actually talked to one company that wanted to do what they call online civic engagement. The whole idea that you're not going to have an open house in a specific area. Instead, you're going to do this online and such. It's great. Most people would rather do that. We have people now that who would much rather email us than call us any day. People are plugged in that way. The problem is, though, you need the email addresses. And I'm not entirely sure where we are. I know we have some because we were talking about this last summer, but I'm sorry, I don't. It's not huge.
It's not huge, yeah.
So,
and you're making the assumption that everyone has access to that.
Basically.
Yeah, it's limited.
Yes.
In some ways, you could say that's a discrimination sort of thing.
It absolutely is. There's even a social justice issue. You can get into that, too.
You know, my problem with it is the one the people we need, one of the groups of people we need to reach mm-hmm. are those who don't have access to that sort of thing, don't have major transportation. Probably public transportation is in emergencies or to go to the doctor or maybe to go to work, but... Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the mom who's stuck in the apartment 24/7 with little kids. That's the person we need to hear from. Is the park that you have close enough to you? Would it help if we had a park over here? Those are the people that I'm concerned about. Is I don't know how, and I there may not be a way, but I really would like to know if there's ways to reach
there is
that
always person. A way if you have the time and money.
Yes. And that's part of it. I think, because I agree that those are all good ways too. But there's also the older generation that, and it doesn't have to be age-wise older generation, that don't like computers, that don't like computers and won't use them. And so you have to have a multifaceted approach, which you've already addressed, except for that interaction. But one other thing that I think that even us as a group might be able to do is to assist with some of the outreach if we're comfortable doing so. I mean, we're the face of the community, and I know that one of the things we do to start out with is we're always listening at meetings, various meetings we're going to, and trying to interact with people to find out their needs so that we know that we're on task here. But I immediately, when you said that, Marcia, keyed in on, you know, I belong to a mother's group, but there's at least 15 other auxiliary ones in the Vancouver area. What a wonderful idea to take that. There isn't a bigger user of our parks, I think, than the mothers or nannies or whatever to go. And if we had a team that maybe went and said they'd love to have us on their agenda and did a little presentation to them and said, here's the place, go to the web and answer this,
if we had
those people would do it.
Yeah.
If we had just that little push. So maybe a volunteer team, can't think of better people than here on PAB.
Maybe
to do that.
Another thing we could do for like multi-use facilities where there's apartments and stuff is property managers in those. And because I think a lot of times when people rent, they're like, oh, well, my lease runs out. I'm not going to be here, so I don't care. To where maybe at least if we got input from the property managers that are there, mm-hmm. they might not be able to speak for everybody, but, you know, you could at least get some kind of input because they're there.
They have a better feel, yeah.
But at least we can, that way we hear from that organization. That
yeah.
And maybe something like
that's
that.
Along the same lines, local churches as well.
Pardon?
Local churches.
Yeah.
Because they've got their thumb on the pulse of the community in that.
Yeah, network. Large group, easy access.
I guess the problem is when I went out to, what's it called? One of the parks out there in the woods. When they were doing the surveys, mm-hmm. and I stood there for a while, and then I sat on the bench and watched what was going on. Nothing was going on. The day they were there, mm-hmm. there was nobody there to participate. Mm-hmm. So, but they'd come on a Saturday or a Sunday. I can tell you that place was hopping the whole time. We've got a lot more interest, a lot more useful answers to the questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to take all those items into account. I don't know how to solve your problem. Yeah. I just know that I don't want to see us spinning our wheels either in areas where we don't really need, mm-hmm. where the need is not there. But defining that need, I see now, and in the conversation is much more difficult than I had.
And I've been thinking as you've been talking in such a discussion about this problem you posed about the apartment complex where someone is not coming out that much, may not have access to the internet, doesn't read the newspaper, what have you. You can always go door to door, but I would have to tell you, I'm not sure that is a good use of staff time, to be honest.
happens with you, because every door you knock on, a lot of people are going, what?
That's not cost effective.
Yes. And that's what it's really all about. The bottom line is, the more advocates that we have, like the people sitting around this table, the better. And if you can recruit people to help get the word out and such, that would also be helpful. I think Mr. Bierke wanted to say something.
I just want to see if there was a possibility of possibly working with Clark Public Utilities to see if we could put a notice into the utility bills that go out to, you know, the grid.
That's a great idea.
And, I mean, we've got our leaf coupons, if you will, that go out. Possibly add something either on the back side of the coupon or just another little leaflet, because folks do look at those.
Can't hurt. Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
Can't hurt.
Show up to a meeting.
Well, it could be a link to the survey. It could
exactly.
Link
to the survey, yeah.
To the open survey house meeting. Or yeah. Answer these questions, mail in the...
Yeah. And I think that's a good idea, too, because I know the county's Department of Environmental Services uses that for information about recycling and such, not necessarily the PUD, but Waste Connection.
There you go.
Sure. So you could have, hey, look, take the survey and get, forgive me, I'm just throwing this out, 5% off.
5% off.
For your month, you know, because you're taking the survey.
Free access to your park.
Free access.
You can bicycle for a mile.
I love that one, Jane.
I'm sure the PUD and Waste Connections will be very interested in this concept.
Waste Connections is not a bad idea either. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but that doesn't hit me.
So, Chris, what would be the possibility of using the school district to...
That's what I was going to suggest, Jeff, was the partner of the school district, because, like, we... And before 2 months ago, if you'd asked how many emails that I think we have, mm-hmm. I would have said maybe 10%. We have 80% of our student population. We have an active email address. So we send something out that way. And I would assume that Vancouver and Battle Ground and Hawkinson are all the same, roughly. Canvas is probably higher.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but would you share those emails?
I would not share those emails. But if we could develop a message that we could send out for our students.
That would work well, too.
Yeah.
That
would
be great.
So, I mean, that would be one way to do it. You know, we work with groups like Columbia Springs where we're sending messages home in backpacks. And, you know, and that's hitting the same group of people, but that would be something we could. I'm sure we could spearhead and coordinate between the bigger districts.
Mm-hmm. And I find your 80% statistic very interesting because, yes, there are still people out there who do not use computers, do not have email addresses, but
there are seniors who have computers and get emails, but there's no way they're going to be able to send to you, figure out how to send.
We have found that there's, you know, with the non-English-speaking groups, those are a lot of people that just, they don't want to sign up for a list, they don't want to be on a list.
Yeah.
So that's where a lot of our gap is when it comes to email addresses.
Yeah. And we actually can, if we do have materials that go out, we can put information in
different
Spanish or Russian. Again, it all goes back to budget.
Got to go.
More than anything else.
Yeah, I got it. I'm rocking really pretty quick myself.
In our district, we're helping.
Thanks for making
it. I would just kind of bring you back, though.
A little worried.
What do you want to
I knew
want
you looked real good
people?
The last time I saw you, but
I think that's doing a lot better. We can give you a list of these are all the potential types of questions, and while you chew on the discussion that was here today, you think of, whoa, what did that trigger for me? What do I think my neighbors want to ask or prioritize? So we'll give you a lot of raw material to flesh out maybe in January. I don't know what's on the agenda already.
January.
And there was another public survey that was done last year. And we can look at those questions, see are they appropriate.
Very extensive.
Do we want to ask more detailed ones of that? Because we already have that. And that was, you know, when the system was both city county. You know, how much of that do we want to reuse or, you know, expand on? So
and the other key is it not be too long.
It can't be too long. Right.
People.
It can't be too long.
They need a many. I've done surveys for some of the school projects.
Thank you, Marsha. We're good. Yep. Good job. Thanks for having me.
See you later, girls.
That's one of the questions.
Take care.
I went to Washington State University. We had to work with a couple different companies and do industry-wide research. And so we had to do surveys for users and different residential installers for different things. Anyway, and a lot of people won't even touch a survey unless there's a benefit to them. So going along the line of,
really?
They need to have,
What's in it for me?
Right. And we did like $100. Go get a $100 gift card.
Oh.
You know, randomly, whoever did it, And people.
God bless you.
Yeah, I mean, that's something
to
consider,
whatever
that is.
I understand exactly what you're talking about.
We don't have
absolutely right. I would just flip it a little bit, though, and I would ask each and every one of you sitting at this table is, if you're talking to your neighbor tomorrow, how would you describe to that person why they should care? Why is this important to them? Why should they pay attention? We need to be able to answer those questions. Hopefully, if we can answer those questions in a compelling fashion, it won't be necessary to offer that carrot to get their attention.
And I think you addressed it really good earlier, Jeff, when you said, saying to someone, well, you take this survey, they don't care. But your tickler, where you threw that out, I really said to myself, you know, he's right, that's the way you grab them.
And there is a number of people out there, too, not everyone, but some people actually like taking online surveys.
The thing with it, though, is that they might care, but they don't realize the impact it's going to impact their life. And so it's the actual need and their felt need. Right. Their actual need, sure, they need a park, but their felt need, I don't have time right now. My kids are running down the street.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So you have to interrupt them by accosting them with some benefit,
right?
As opposed to, because you know it's their action need. But you have to make it.
Bump it up in urgency.
Urgency.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, act now and get $50 Target gift card. You know what? Being
I'll be taking it 15 times for that, Adam. I know what you mean.
Some kind of venue that's outside their scope to bring in to meet their felt need. Because it's Christmas time.
I think there has been discussion of doing open houses. I think open houses are not a bad thing. I just would not use them as the only thing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes those of us in government, we can use open houses as check the box. There. We did our open houses. We've done our work.
Yeah.
Nothing more to do.
And that's
what you don't want to do.
That's a huge problem. Like I live off the 502, the new construction of 219. And a lot of the businesses are ticked off because they didn't go to that open house that said, hey, we want a light. We want a new entrance into, there's a business, say, S&I Rentals, rents out equipment. They're going to have a big concrete boundary in front of their business. So only traffic is ever going to be able to come into there one way. And had they gone to this in-house meeting, right, they would have been able to argue their point. Hey, look, you're going to shut us down. Yeah. If you do that, that's half for coming to a business. So there has to be that you know, that's a good example of, well, you should have came to the
It's your own fault.
Actually, the road projects are the ones that we usually get people to come to our open house. We tell them we're going to be working on the roads right in front of your home, right in front of your business.
Sure.
They actually do pay attention pretty quickly then.
Right.
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, that's...
And also it helps that it's right here, right now.
Sure.
But that was like the open house they had for the comp plan out. The one I went to on Ridgefield, it was like, eat all the cookies you want, because
nobody's there.
Yeah.
Unless you frame it in such a way that gets people
absolutely
interested, you're going to have that type of tepid response.
Yeah.
I've been involved in government in one capacity or another for almost 30 years. Comp plan, still, two words, really bore me. It doesn't sound that riveting when you really get down to it.
Right.
And if you show up, they're so long, you're not going to sit there. I'm into short break.
Yeah.
Gotta happen.
I think most people are.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm with you there,
Dan. I got a short attention span. Yeah.
You get to a point, you've lost me already. I'm on to something else already. Okay. I think we covered level of service. Probably beat some things to death, but I think it raised a lot of questions, which is what it's supposed to do. Good discussion. As I said before, we'll move into the other parts of the kind of recreation and facilities demand and need, and then the whole public outreach piece. So So by the next meeting, I think we will have a whole bunch of questions to start. You guys looking through, this question makes sense, doesn't, whatever. So we can get surveys up and running. And then the demand need of those other facilities. And that's it for what I know.
That was really good, though. You gave a lot of things to think about.
Yeah, the thing that keeps running around my head is that phrase from the movie, it's complicated.
Yeah.
It is.
And unfortunately,
fingers everywhere.
Unlike a lot of businesses, we don't spend government, as I say, I'm not government, but as governments, we don't spend a portion of our revenues on marketing. So we're not doing a lot. I mean, there's a limited amount of performance surveying, you know, state of the state or state of the county, what do people think? But if you were really looking at customer service and really getting a good sense of, you know, how are people responding to road issues or infrastructure issues or park issues, the government doesn't usually spend a lot of resources on that. And it's a real shortcoming in terms of letting people know, guess what your dollars went for? Here are all the parks we built. They don't sell themselves. So there's a little bit of gap in there. It's a challenge, but.
Have you guys ever watched, the Oregon Field Guide?
Mm-hmm.
I was watching it last night. I enjoy watching that show because it just shows the amazing parks all around Oregon. It would be interesting, because a lot of people like to be entertained, right? To maximize that, to go, hey, watch this video of the wonderful opportunities or the wonderful things, the offerings that we have at our local parks.
Yes.
And do a small, I mean, it would be fairly easy to do, fairly cheap to do, a really cool, fun video of watching the salmon run up, you know, daybreak,
right.
Or, you know, something like that, where it encourages, gets people in the mindset of, oh, wow, I want to be in. Because I want my kids to play.
Mm-hmm. We do need to.
Yeah. Do we have a visitor center type commission like Portland does?
Oh, well,
that might work on tourism, that might build a video like that?
We have a CBTV that we can rely on to help us out with that. You know, so.
So that's been done for like the water trail. CBTV did a special piece on that and they filmed it and edited it, and that was really good for the, the water trail piece. They also helped when the city was sort of prepping up for the vote for MPD that, you know, failed abysmally, but they did a whole piece on, you know, parks being for people and this is what you get and this is how our park system developed, and, you know, a lot of like kids playing and day camps and, you know, rec stuff. So we have had that out there, and it's really a question of put a proposal together and talk to the CBTV folks and say, here's our idea, can you put something together for us and put the parameters together, cute little YouTube piece.
Sure.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be good. And that might
be a good idea.
For why should you care?
Right.
Who cares about parks?
Right.
You know, I live in the state of Washington because one of the number one reasons, according to the public poll, was access to outdoor recreation.
Right.
And then take it down to like Vancouver Mall and let it run all day long.
You take it for granted.
Good idea.
So that's a good idea. Could that be a very valuable part of the public outreach?
Absolutely. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. I think you guys need to adjourn or something. I'm done.
I think that's all we've got left on our side, right?
We're talking about our next meeting, Barbara. Should we have it as a regular time frame meeting, or should we make it a little longer? I mean, that's one thing we should probably.
What is your need? Because the primary focus is the comp plan, right?
Yes.
I don't think we can do too many more of these long marathon
races. Not back to back. So let's do a normal one, and then maybe if need be, you can do a February long one.
Okay.
My part, you know, I could probably fit in an extra meeting easier than I can all day meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay, that's good to know.
So.
Yeah. I think it's
and it helps with the tension span too.
Yeah. When you keep.
I mean, but I
have
to start moving.
My ADD kicks in.
There you go.
That's why I stood up my issue.
Moving right along. Motion to adjourn.
Yes.
Second
over here.
Gene, thank you for putting all this together.
I'm glad we're here.
Adjourn.
Thank you.
Adjourn.